This Slate spoiler special is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 700,000 high-quality video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code SPOILER5.
Hi, this is Dana Stevens, Slate's movie critic, here with the Slate spoiler special podcast on Star Trek Into Darkness, the new J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie. And joining me in the Slate studio in New York is Brian Lauder. Hello, Brian.
Hello.
You are the editorial assistant for culture at Slate.
That's right.
And you're a longtime Trek fan. Would you qualify yourself as one?
Yeah, I'm definitely not a Matt Iglesias level of Trekkiness, but I grew up on Voyager and have gone back and watched most of the old series and a number of the movies. So, yeah.
So Voyager was your entry point.
That's right. Yeah, I grew up sort of when that was on television and followed it very closely.
You're making me feel like I was definitely born during the Johnson administration.
Yeah.
So we are actually recording this spoiler after the fact, a week after the movie came out and the review came out by popular demand, because a lot of people wrote to me saying, why are you not spoiling Star Trek? It ended up being because I didn't get to see it at the advanced press screening and sort of had to write at the last minute. But then after seeing it, I realized this really is a movie that needs to be spoiled, because
Absolutely. There's
so much stuff you can't talk about in a review, including the big reveal of who the villain is, which I think anyone intelligent would have guessed before going into the movie. But I had avoided the press so effectively and walked in so blind that I actually was kind of surprised.
Yeah, I was sort of surprised when people were upset that it was spoiled. I believe another critic did spoil it, and there was kind of a big backlash against that. And I was aware that it was Khan long before, so I didn't really realize it was a secret, but I guess I had just figured it out from sort of clues along the way.
Well, so as long as we just revealed it, let's talk a little bit about that. So the reveal that we're talking about is that the villain who's initially introduced under the name John Harrison, is that right? Like
that's
a
right.
Nice, bland moniker, played by Benedict Cumberbatch, who at the beginning is just sort of a vague evildoer. We're not quite sure what his motives or intentions are.
Piercing eyes, yeah.
He is revealed to be Khan, who in this reinvention of the Star Trek continuity would be the Ricardo Montalban character from Space Seed, the episode in the original series, and later from the second movie, The Wrath of Khan.
Right.
And who's sort of, I guess, remembered in pop culture as the great Star Trek villain, although there are so many other great ones to choose from.
Yeah, being a child of Voyager, the Borg is always my great villain, but Khan does seem to be the most revered among them all. Yeah.
I'm wondering in future J.J. Abrams versions of this franchise, if they will start getting to, you know, Deep Space Nine characters and Voyager characters, because it seems really clear that he's invented, you know, he just wants to use the whole patchwork Star Trek universe as a way to elaborate on themes.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So this is sort of jumping into the middle of the movie, but I want to know what you did think about that reinvention of the villain as Khan. I think that even though Cumberbatch is great and he's really wonderful at projecting that kind of, you know, all-purpose evil, that it's really kind of a letdown, the end of the movie, as far as how that character is wrapped up. And not that much is done with all the promise of Khan as a villain.
Yeah, he's definitely embodies the sort of just, like you say, pure evil thing. But there's not much room for him to, like, do much with that. He doesn't have that many lines. He's just kind of there, and he crashes a ship into San Francisco, and that's it. So I agree. I don't think that it was the most potent realization of that character, but I think it worked for the purposes of the movie as well. Yeah.
The whole idea, right, is that he was this absolute dictator, and that he had 2/3 of the world under his power.
Yes.
That's briefly referred to, but we don't really get any sense of, like, what was life like under Khan. You know, I kind of would have loved, like, a little historical discursion where they talked about...
Well, yeah, it was interesting, you know, his being such an important villain in the universe, they really didn't give him much of a backstory. I mean, if you don't already know it, if you're new to the universe, I mean, yeah, he's 300 years ago, he rules half the Earth. There are, like, all these genetically modified beings who are, like, trying... There's, like, a big war, eugenics wars.
He's kind of Genghis Khan, right? I mean, I think he's meant to be patterned after that kind of
and
leader.
He's exiled, and it's like there's a whole backstory there that's not really given in this film, and so he ends up being kind of this, you know, stone cold guy that just is there being evil, but there's no, you lose sort of the political weight of
right.
His
once
story.
Once we get the reveal that he's Khan, there's sort of nothing left to do with him. And there also could have been great seeds planted for some return of either him or something related to his story.
Yeah.
If we had felt a little bit more of what he means to Kirk, that was a huge part of the movie, The Wrath of Khan, right?
Yeah.
What did Khan mean to Kirk? He was his Ahab. He'd been chasing him through space for all these years. That could have been just sort of saved up for some future version.
Well, and it's funny because we have, you know, Leonard Nimoy coming back playing old Spock, who's now in this universe. Somehow, I won't get into the complicated physics.
He
of
basically
that.
Pops up to advise his younger self. He has in both movies, right?
And shares the information against the Temporal Prime Directive that Khan was indeed one of the greatest foes they ever faced, and it was at great cost and all of that. But that's like so tantalizing, and there's no explanation of what he means by that. So if you aren't familiar with the old movie or the TV series, then like I can't imagine how that played for someone. I mean, I knew, but you know, here's this. And in fact, our Aisha Harris, our Browbeat writer, who's a Star Trek virgin, wrote about this movie as a Star Trek virgin and had no clue what was going on in that scene. You know, and I can imagine why. Like, it would be very strange to see this old dude pop up. She thought it was his father.
Yeah, it's fan service. This is what Edelstein said in New York Magazine that was such a smart insight, is that this is basically kind of glorified fanfic. It's like mm-hmm. big budget fanfic, mm-hmm. you know? And so if you really are an old time fan, you're going to feel these like warm glows, you know? Mm-hmm. But it is sort of service for the fans without necessarily a lot to say to people coming from the outside.
Yeah,
assuming that there are many people like Aisha who haven't seen any Star Trek in their lives.
Which just seems impossible.
Yeah, not
too
many. Yeah. Would that be a part of your complaint against this movie? Because in general, you found it too much of an actioner and not enough of a true science fiction movie, right?
Yeah, and I think part of that is the use of Khan as the villain. I mean, he is one of the more action-oriented villains in the Star Trek universe. You know, if you go back to the Star Trek II, the original movie where he's there, and then the episode that sort of spawned him. There's some cryogenic freezing and he's a genetically superior being and all of that, but it's not so sci-fi. And the thing that I miss in the Abrams movies, which is something that I wrote about on Slate, is sort of the spirit of exploration and discovery and sort of geeky sci-fi-ness that I found in Voyager, that I found in TNG and the series before that. You know, it's just not here in this movie. This movie is an action movie. It's a sort of military movie, a political movie, post-9/11, you know, kind of gloss.
So it's not curious, right, in the way that the show is.
It's not curious. There's not a lot of space for sort of breathing and meditating on different ideas or possibilities, mysteries.
Well, there's not really any downtime on the Enterprise, mm-mm. right? And a really big part of the original series, for sure, and of many of the movies as well, is that there is downtime. There's, there's three-dimensional chess games, and there's conversations about science.
There's stuff in the holodeck. There's, like, conference room meetings. I mean, one of the things I actually liked a lot about Voyager that I think other people didn't like but that I loved was they would have these sort of roundtable discussions where everyone would be hypothesizing about what, you know, the new tachyon particle burst in this nebula was about. And, like, I don't know. I can tell that, it's not the most exciting thing, but it did sort of please the geek in me, for sure.
And you were saying that show sort of sparked your curiosity about actual science as
well. That's right. Yeah. No, that was about the time that I got interested in astronomy first and then physics and read, you know, my Stephen Hawking and Brian Greene and got a telescope and did the whole thing. No, it totally led to an interest in actual science and sort of comparing the sci-fi narratives that you'd get in a Voyager show with what is actually possible. And, you know, a lot of times the differences aren't so big. I mean, a lot of the stuff is based in science, if not, you know, totally possible or plausible.
And there are so many science words. I was reading about mm-hmm. this after this came out, that the OED has adopted from Star Trek,
yeah.
some of which have come to name, you know, actual technological developments that Star Trek sort of foresaw.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I think scientists will tell you that many of them are inspired by, you know, sci-fi shows, Star Trek and others, to ask the questions that they ask, for sure.
But one thing that this movie does, and the previous J.J. Abrams Star Trek as well, I think does preserve from at least the original series, I think from all of them really, is that optimism and hope, you know, that they're not mm-hmm. dystopian fantasies about the future, they're utopian fantasies, and that's sort of hard to come by in mainstream action blockbusters set in the future, right? I mean, it's so presumed that we're going to be wandering through some rubble-filled post-apocalyptic landscape that I did like the sweetness and the forward-lookingness of the end of this movie.
And instead, the whole world is like a beautiful San Francisco, like, you know, skyline. No, it is. Star Trek has always had that sort of utopian, idealist idea of the future, and I always appreciated that. I think that that's a hopeful vision versus, yeah, the more dystopian thing that we're more used to, for sure.
Let's take a break here for a word from our sponsor, and then we'll get to talking about the cast, which I really want to hear your thoughts on. This episode of the Slate Spoiler Special is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 700,000 high-quality video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code SPOILER5. At Shutterstock.com, you'll find the perfect video for your next creative project, whether it's a website, an advertisement, a multimedia presentation, or any kind of film project. They have over 700,000 high-quality stock video clips, 2D animations, and 3D motion graphics. They have clips in a variety of digital formats, and most come in HD. They source the clips from around the world and put them at your fingertips, adding 10,000 new clips every week, so whenever you visit, you'll find something new. You can try Shutterstock today by signing up for a free account. No credit card needed. Just start an account. Begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could be like and save video selections you find to your clip box. Once you decide to purchase, use the offer code SPOILER5 and new accounts will get 30% off any package. Again, that's Shutterstock.com, and for 30% off new accounts, use the offer code SPOILER5. The Spoiler Special thanks Shutterstock for their support. Okay, back to Star Trek. So it sounds like, unlike me, you're not a fetishist for the original show. So these characters, Kirk, Spock, Uhura, Scotty, are not, you know, maybe as archetypal a part of your DNA as they are to me. But what do you think of this cast and how they bring to life or don't bring to life these familiar characters?
Sure. Yeah, I love Zachary Quinto as Spock. I think he does a really good job of that. Although I agreed with your review when you said that there's a little bit too much emotion in him over the course of this
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, and I think that's a script thing, not necessarily
yeah,
Zachary
sure,
Quinto.
Yeah, sure,
thing.
Sure. But I think it would be better if they let, if the script let him maintain the sort of Vulcan stoicness, because he's good at it. I think,
and he's got a long way to go, right?
Yeah,
he's got more movies in which he can break down.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and I like you was a little disappointed in the tear streaming down the cheek, you know, towards the end. But
or even just the positing that this relationship between Spock and Uhura, right? I mean, I like Kirk was sort of asking, well, how is that possible?
Yeah.
How is this relationship going forward between the human and the half human?
Yeah, and it was so briefly explored that it didn't seem necessary. I mean, I'm not entirely sure that why that was even in the movie. Although I loved Zoe Saldana in that role, and I think we could use more of her.
Yeah, do you agree that it was, I mean, there's a lot of sort of sexist outcry against
yeah.
this movie, which is sort of hard for me to take seriously given, I mean, it's sort of like the race complaints about girls. It's like, what movie of this mm-hmm. sort isn't completely mm-hmm. sexist, you know? But certainly Uhura is given less to do than she was in the original series.
Absolutely, yeah. And the other female character, Dr. Marcus, who shows up,
is basically just cheesecake.
She's just there with blonde hair and looking pretty, and it's kind of pointless. So I wish we could have a little bit more of both of those characters maybe in the next movie, if possible.
What about Chris Pine? To my amazement, I'm such a William Shatner fan, mm-hmm. and there's really no one who can declaim a line of dialogue, over-declaim a line of dialogue like William Shatner, but somehow Chris Pine's performance, you know, without surpassing it, captures a little bit of the spirit and is also its own thing. I think Chris Pine is great as Kirk.
It is, and it seems to me it has a little bit more of the sort of hothead about it than the original Kirk did, which I like. I buy it. It makes sense. I mean, it's towards the beginning of this movie when he gets dismissed initially from his from being the captain of the ship. He was a little overwrought, I thought, a little too angry, and I'm gonna have a drink at the bar and just be like that. But overall, I buy it, and I like him in the role. I think it works for sure.
Yeah, and it brings in the sort of the horn dog side of Kirk, mm-hmm. which, as sexist as it may be, I always love. I love the shore leave moments, like in the original series when you'd see him putting his boots back on, which was so racy for the time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It did seem like the red shirts get very sidelined in this version, right? All the mm-hmm. menial laborers of the ship, that is Scotty, right, who runs the engine room, and Chekhov, who has a tiny, tiny part.
Yeah.
Those guys seem like they were more there just to sort of provide the furnishings of a vaguely Star Trek-like bridge.
Yeah, although it's true. They're not very present. However, Scotty...
Simon Pegg's funny as Scotty.
He's great. And it's, oddly enough, though, he does provide one of the most important plot points in the movie, where he discovers the USS Vengeance being built outside of Jupiter or something. It's very quickly shown, but he goes there and he's on the ship and ends up sort of saving the day in the end. But it's only very briefly explored, and it's a shame because he was great in the role.
Yeah, you wanted to see him climbing through the tubes mm-hmm. like we always did in the
yes.
old series, right?
Yes.
And what about some of the furnishings of the universe, the way it looks, the way it sounds? Let's talk about that. Michael Giacchino's score, which I think is really spirited and funny and bright and captures a lot of the spirit of the original, which is hard because there is fantastic music in that
show. Yeah.
Not just the main Alexander Courage theme, but all those little incidental cues,
mm-hmm.
right?
No, and they're so, I mean, you just can't have Star Trek without the music. And I think he did a really nice job of taking quotes from that music, especially in the end titles. There, you know, he did a nice job of weaving it with his own scoring, and it was of a piece with the universe, and I loved it. I think it really carried the movie forward and made me feel a part of it.
Among other things, it's kind of melodic, you know, in mm-hmm. an old-fashioned way. It's not just that Hans
Very
Zimmer,
orchestral, yeah.
you know, it's not just pounding percussive mm-hmm. suspense music.
No, it's beautiful. I mean, it's a lovely. I actually bought the album, and I haven't bought a soundtrack in a long time because of the sort of Hans Zimmerification of just ostinatos everywhere. But this was lovely and really well written, I thought.
And the look of it?
Look of it was great. I actually noticed the warp core being really interesting in this. I remember the warp core as always just being a sort of blue tube of, you know, sort of electrified material.
I actually Google imaged the warp core to see how it's looked in all different periods. And it's appeared in basically every version of the show, the warp core being, I guess, the, you know, central power unit of the ship, right?
Yeah,
which sort of looks like a big air conditioning unit.
Yeah, there's meant to be some sort of, I think, antimatter reaction going on that enables warp travel somehow. I'm not entirely sure how that works. But in this version, in Abrams' version, it looks much more complicated. It's, you know, in the Voyager version and ones before that, it was sort of this clean, you know, blue tube. And in this, it was very complicated with all kinds of valves and layers. And given, you know, the radiation poisoning being such a big part of this movie at the end when Kirk dies from it, that makes much more sense than sort of the conference room with the blue tube in the middle of it. I thought it was a smart way to reimagine the ship.
You know, that's a complete callback to The Wrath of Khan, almost to the degree that it's a little bit too on the nose when he dies the same way that Spock dies in Wrath of Khan, right, and is locked in this chamber and the two of them say goodbye with the Vulcan salute through the glass, and all of that is exactly the same, as is the scream Khan, which I thought was a little bit cheap. I mean, that's such a famous moment. It's been parodied so many times. Yeah. To have it just reproduced exactly without any kind of twist was a little bit on the nose.
Well, and I guess one of the things that Abrams has to do with these is nod to the hardcore fans, and I was.
But there are nods that are not just reproductions of the moment.
Yeah, no, of course, and I agree that the Khan scream was a little much, and it had sort of a zoom, and it just felt a little cheesy.
I'm surprised the camera didn't pull high up into space like in Simpsons parodies of Khan screams.
Yeah.
What about the lens flares? Did they drive you crazy? That's such a J.J. Abrams
tick. I know
tick.
this is your pet peeve with him. It doesn't bother me so much. And I saw this in IMAX, like, you know, 2 inches away from the screen.
Oh, I wish I'd seen it in IMAX.
It was intense. I actually don't know that I would want to see it that way again. It was quite large and intense. So I didn't notice the lens flares as much as I did just the bigness of everything.
I don't mind the odd lens flare, and it makes sense in some movies, like in Super 8, right, when he's setting it back in the day when, you know, there were a lot of lens flares at the time. But it's starting to be almost a crazy tick where you can't stop.
Yeah.
What about the 3D? Do you think that added anything?
I didn't mind it. I don't know that it added anything, no, but I didn't mind it. I mean, I think as 3D goes, you know, a space movie makes sense for it. There's more depth to play with and ships traveling and all of that. So I think it was fine. But I don't know that it also was essential. I think it worked.
Do you feel like you want to see more J.J. Abrams Star Trek, or is it tapped out?
I would be curious to see more if it goes in the more science fiction direction. I mean, I enjoyed both of the new movies, the 2009 and this one. I think they're great action films, a fun night of the movies for sure. But given that we're now going on our 5-year mission, you know, let's hope that there's some exploration, some of new races, new aliens, new phenomena, whatever. But I want that sort of spirit of discovery and exploration back. I don't want political intrigue and Star Wars style fighting. That's just not what I go to Star Trek for.
So we can't wrap up this conversation without talking about the fact that J.J. Abrams, who directed this movie, is also going to be directing the Star Wars, not reboot, but the sequel, the next Star Wars, which is coming out, I believe, in 2015. It's very, very strange that the same man was given Star Wars and Star Trek. I think to people who perceive those as two, not necessarily opposed, but very, very different universes, it just feels wrong that one person would be at the reins of both. It brings them too close together somehow.
I would go as far as to say it's perverse. I really don't get how one person could sort of direct both those universes, precisely for the reasons we were talking about earlier. I mean, Star Wars, for me, was always an action film with a lot of politics. I never really cared for it that much, actually.
A space western, as they say,
space western, yeah. I watch them. They're fine. I don't really connect to it at all in the way that I connected
completely
to Star Trek.
Agree. Even as a kid, I mean, I think I was 11 or so when Star Wars came out. Mm-hmm. I guess I was supposed to be the ideal age to, you know, buy the action figures and care about it. And I remember sort of feeling like this is a kid's movie, even then, you know, not disliking it, but just it didn't capture my imagination the way the Star Trek show did.
No, absolutely not. I mean, it is, you know, it's a fine, entertaining film, but a series of films, but it just does not sort of engross you or me in the way that I think Star Trek has done. So,
but do you think maybe Abrams is more suited to it since we're finding this too action-y and not curious enough?
I would say so, yeah. It seems like, given the sort of focus on politics and action in these two Star Trek movies, that Star Wars was a better fit for him. And, you know, I would like to see more Star Trek being made. I don't know if it's going to be by him or if someone else will continue the franchise. Maybe, I think even better would be a television show than more movies, actually. I would love to see it rebooted that way. I think it Star Trek lends itself more to that format and allows for that the space we were talking about lacking, the sort of breathing room.
Completely.
It
can explore different cultures, right?
Yeah, it's much better on television that way. So I would hope that, you know, the success of these two movies will sort of make a studio interested in going that way. But I don't need him to be on Star Trek anymore. If he wants to go to Star Wars, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he can defect over to the other side, to the dark side.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you so much for coming in to spoil Star Trek Into Darkness with me.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Our producer is Chris Wade. The executive producer of Slate Podcast is Andy Bowers. For Slate.com, I'm Dana Stevens.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.